From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. While all eyes are on the presidential race on November 3rd, there are also 35 seats in the United States Senate up for election. Even if a Democrat wins the White House this fall, it is control of the U.S. Senate that determines how effectively a new president can govern. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has demonstrated as much, controlling the legislative agenda and judicial nominations and confirmations like no one in recent memory. We turn to John Nichols, National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation magazine, host of the podcast Next Left. He's also a contributing writer for The Progressive and In These Times, an associate editor of The Capital Times, the author of numerous books, including Horsemen of the Trumpocalypse, a field guide to the most dangerous people in America. His new piece in The Nation is entitled Democrats Will Be Lost Without the Senate. Welcome to the program, John.
It's an honor to be with you, Sonali.
So the 35 seats up for re-election, but of course not all 35 are vulnerable to be flipped. And the way things stand now, from what I can tell, Democrats only need to win something like 3 or 4 more seats than they currently have. So they need to retain everyone that they have and then 3 or 4 extra in order to grab control of the Senate?
That's right. You're exactly right to say 3 or 4, because it's a little fluid here. And that's the truth. Anytime you have roughly 36 positions open, there are lots of different factors that come into it. So here's the bottom line. All of the Democrats who are seeking re-election are in pretty good shape. It's likely that they will win or that the Democratic seat will retain for the Democrats, except for one, and that is the seat of Doug Jones in Alabama. Jones, of course, is the guy who beat Judge Roy Moore a couple years ago in that incredibly contentious and frankly bizarre race down there. Alabama is a very conservative state, and so Jones has an extremely hard race. Beyond that, Democrats are likely to hold their seats. If Jones loses, they need to get 4 seats in order to be tied. If Jones wins, they only need 3. Now, here's the bottom line on the 3, though. If you only win 3 seats, then a new Democratic president and vice president become very significant factors, because the vice president would be breaking ties and things like that. So really, realistically, I think the best calculus is that to have a clear governing majority, Democrats need to pick up probably 5 seats. And that may seem like a lot. In fact, at the start of the year, it would have seemed like an almost insurmountable number. At this point, it actually seems quite doable.
And I want to focus in on the Doug Jones issue for a minute, because, of course, it was just this week that the Republican primary in Alabama gave an indicator of, you know, I'm not sure exactly what. So Doug Jones has only had his seat for a couple of years because he won his race in a special election. So unlike most senators, he hasn't had a full 6-year term. And Jeff Sessions, whose seat that was vacated and that Doug Jones won, Jeff Sessions wanted that seat back. He's in a fight, not an ideological fight with Trump, but basically one of loyalty. And he lost his primary. He lost the GOP primary to a former football coach that Trump has backed. So on the one hand, it seems as though nationwide, Trump's waning popularity may be a liability for Republican senators. But in this Alabama primary, it seems as though having Trump in his court helped Tommy Tuberville.
That's exactly right. And look, I think it's important to remember up front that no one should ever mourn for Jeff Sessions. Even if Trump was against him in this race, Sessions is a horrible player who's got a record of racism and xenophobia that goes back a very long way. Now, that didn't disqualify him electorally in Alabama in the past. But this time, against a candidate who was just as conservative, but had Trump's stamp of approval, Sessions wasn't able to, you know, maintain his political, quote unquote, winning streak, and he was defeated. The coach who was nominated is a bit of a mess. He has had a lot of financial bad dealings. There's a lot of history on how he handled his coaching job that is controversial. And so he's not the strongest candidate in the world. He also isn't particularly experienced as a candidate in the way that Sessions would have been. And so the view is that despite Trump's strong backing, it is within the realm of possibility that Doug Jones could retain that seat. And here's the interesting dynamic, if you will. Polling in Alabama, as in a number of other southern states, suggests that Democrats are doing substantially better than they have in recent years. There is one poll in Alabama that shows Doug Jones within 2 percentage points. And if that holds to be the case, if Trump's ability to draw out his voters is weakened, and if there really is a heavy mobilization of African-American and moderate to liberal voters in Alabama from across demographic spectrum, then it's possible that Jones could get reelected. But the important thing to understand there is that that's a very hard race.
Well, the new Quinnipiac poll that showed Trump trailing Biden by 15 points is, of course, confirms other polls. But one of the things that it shows is that there are now about 10% more people in who are registered voters who identify as Democrats than Republicans, which is really an interesting trend. We're seeing, this slow, I think, change of heart among some Republican voters who picked Trump. Trump hashtag Trump regret is a thing on Twitter. So what does that mean for Senate races? Who are some of the other vulnerable GOP senators? I understand Susan Collins, who's, you know, sort of a moderate Republican, who's also deeply unpopular among both Republicans and Democrats, perhaps because she's a moderate Republican. She's very vulnerable too, right?
Exceptionally vulnerable. In fact, I think that Collins may be with the there's a little bit of a competition on the most vulnerable Republican. To be honest, Martha McSally in Arizona is very vulnerable. Cory Gardner in Colorado is very vulnerable. And there's a number of others. But Collins has become kind of a central figure in this fight because she did identify as a moderate, and because she had this reputation. I think it was always inflated. I never thought of her as a particularly moderate member of the Senate. She tended to come through for the Republicans when they needed her more often than not. And of course, as a Republican senator, she votes to organize the caucus and to empower Mitch McConnell.
She claims she's pro-choice, but then she voted for Brett Kavanaugh.
That's exactly, you summed it up.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. But it's more than that. It runs deeper. She plays a role in the Senate of sustaining the president and his agenda at points where if she were to go against it and align with, at this point, Mitt Romney and perhaps a couple of others, she could really undermine it. And I think the key vote, aside from Kavanaugh, was the impeachment vote. I mean, look, here's the bottom line. At the start of February, the United States Senate had the ability to stop Donald Trump. Now, it had a Republican majority. The likelihood of that was very limited. But still, every senator had a conscience choice. They could choose to say, we cannot have any more of this. Susan Collins did not vote to stop Donald Trump. And frankly, as he kind of goes downhill on so many levels, not just his approval rating, but really his handling of COVID-19, mass unemployment, the uprising on behalf of racial justice. There are so many things that are going wrong for him and diminishing him. And as that happens, I think it drags down all the senators that stood with him, but particularly Susan Collins.
What about Mitch McConnell, the most powerful Republican in the country after Donald Trump, who is arguably his biggest enabler, who has turned the Senate into a legislative graveyard, who has confirmed a Republican judicial picks at a pace that we've never seen before. How vulnerable could Mitch McConnell be?
Not as vulnerable as a lot of people would like. I like to see him. Pray.
That is not the answer I wanted to hear.
I know. Look, Mitch McConnell is a very skilled politician, whether you like him or not. He wields his power very effectively as regards Kentucky, and he lets Kentuckians know that. And so as a result, the polling shows that he's in a relatively strong position. The interesting thing is people don't like him. He's not personally well-liked at all in Kentucky or any place else. But there is at least the polling suggests that there is a willingness to reelect him. Now, that's not certain. He has a credible opponent, Amy McGrath, and Kentucky has shown some willingness to vote for Democrats. They now have a Democratic governor. So I don't suggest that McConnell is unbeatable, but he's a hard, hard race. And the fact is, there's a lot of races that are easier to win for Democrats than Kentucky.
Right. I mean, even having McConnell being toppled as Senate Majority Leader, if not Senator, would be, you know, a loss for conservatism and for Trumpism. Just going back to what you were saying, as a skilled politician, one of the things that we know McConnell does is he, you know, shamelessly appropriates money for his state, you know, to the point where he flouts laws and ethical rules. And I guess he does the kind of cost-benefit analysis that Republicans, you know, do in how they play politics ruthlessly. And I suppose that calculation benefits him.
Look, that's you know politics well, and that's exactly the reality of the situation. And remember, Kentucky is a state that relies very, very heavily on federal aid and federal money. And so here you have this U.S. Senator, Mitch McConnell, who undermines federal programs all over the place, who, you know, denies people the resources that they need at every turn. And yet, in part because of that, because he is such a, you know, a very, very conservative player at the national level, in a sense, Kentuckians become more reliant on him. They're like, wow, there's not a lot coming out of Washington. If we lose Mitch McConnell, maybe we'll lose what we have. Now, do I believe that he could be beaten despite that? Yes, I do. But we have to be honest about the fact that this is how he has played politics, and that's made him somewhat more politically robust than some of the other Republicans. But I will emphasize, I think your key point there, Sonali, was the latter one that you made. If he is removed as majority leader, i.e. if Democrats get control of the Senate, then you really do have a situation where a new Democratic administration could govern. On the other hand, if Mitch McConnell remains as majority leader, if Republicans retain control of the Senate, then Mitch McConnell will define the limits of the governing agenda for the next administration.
Will most critically determine the Supreme Court majority. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, bless her, has been, you know, probably looking to retire. She was just released from the hospital after a possible infection, and reports are that she is doing well. But, you know, say there is a Democratic president and a Republican Senate in January, and Ginsburg, you know, has to retire. The chances that McConnell would allow a new Democratic president to nominate and push through a liberal justice are pretty, you know, low compared to what he did or in regard to what he did when Obama was president and tried to fill an absence with Merrick Garland. He's not going to let it happen.
That's exactly right. And so there's two things in play here that are really important. Number one, McConnell has shown that he is willing to game the rules. He is really willing to cheat in order to keep a Democratic nominee off the court, to refuse to hold hearings, to refuse to allow a vote. And so that's number one, and that's a critical factor. But then there's a second factor which may be just as dangerous, and that is that if early in the new term, a Supreme Court justice steps down or passes away. And remember, there's a number of justices who are, you know, not exactly young. And so it's not just Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Mm-hmm. But if a position comes open, you run the risk that the Biden administration, if Biden is the president, would feel a need to negotiate with McConnell about a nomination, i.e., that you would get, you might get a nomination, it might even go to the Senate, but it could only be as good or bad as Mitch McConnell thought acceptable. You know, this is the dangerous thing, is that McConnell, as majority leader, effectively plays a role that is almost equivalent to an executive. He is not the president by any means, but he has an ability to go into that room and say, you know, you can nominate who you want. I will block that person, or we will stop that person, or you can nominate somebody who is actually way more conservative than you'd expect from a Democrat, maybe not as right wing as a Republican would pick, but way more conservative. And so by any measure, no matter what the dynamics are, no matter how it plays out, if McConnell remains as majority leader, the Supreme Court does not move to so progressive a position as it could. And it's also the lower federal courts. This McConnell has shown an incredible willingness to mess with the courts at every level. And so just on that standpoint alone, removing him as majority leader really is, you know, kind of step one for a Democratic administration to be able to have any impact, a consequential long-term impact on the judiciary.
So in order for Democrats to retain comfortable control, or to get, I should say, comfortable control of the U.S. Senate, 5 seats is what you said earlier, they need to win, assuming they keep that Doug Jones keeps his seat. So I'm going through some of these as you and I are talking about Susan Collins in Maine, Martha McSally in Arizona, and then we have, you know, Cory Gardner in Colorado. What about John Cornyn in Texas, Tom Tillis in North Carolina? These are five Republican senators who, at least some polls suggest, are vulnerable. Could these be the seats that could be flipped?
Yep, you're on it. And let me throw another one in there, a couple more in the mix, mm-hmm. there that I think are really important. In fact, maybe ahead of Texas. Cornyn is, I think, potentially vulnerable in Texas. I think both Texas and Georgia are moving toward a competitive status. And so you want to keep a close eye on them. But there are some seats where the Democrats are already ahead in the polls. Number one, Montana. Steve Bullock looks to be ahead of Senator Daines up there. Bullock is the Democratic governor of the state, very personally popular, running a good campaign. Secondly, I think that in Iowa, there is a real chance that the Democrat there could take the seat. The polling seems to be pretty good. And then finally, in North Carolina, you mentioned Senator Tillis, and Tillis is in fact vulnerable. And I think that there is evidence to suggest that he could be beaten. So right there, you've got if you have Maine, Colorado with Cory Gardner, Arizona with Martha McSally, and then you add on Montana, Iowa, and North Carolina, you're talking about 6 seats. That's quite remarkable there. Then you open up the possibilities, not the certainties, of course, but the possibilities of strong races going on right now in Georgia, South Carolina, and Texas. You could have even more than 6. Now, I always caution that Senate races tend to move toward the end of the cycle. And so what looks good now might not look as good come November. But there's simply no question that the Democrats are in a position where if Biden holds his strength as a presidential candidate, and he's polling reasonably well at this point, and if they run the races right, if they're smart and invest, frankly, in the right places, that the Democrats can take the Senate. And in fact, they could take it with a reasonable majority.
Do you think that the reason why so many Republican senators are vulnerable is because Trump's unpopularity might be sort of suppressing, you know, turnout. People are less enthusiastic about Trump. They may be less enthusiastic about turning out for their Republican senator. Or is it that Americans are starting to see Republican lawmakers as enablers of Trump? They're so angry about Trump that they are turning to vote for Democrats.
No, I think you're right. I think both of those things are in play. Trump has made the Republican Party an expression of his mania, his personal, you know, obsessions. And so as a result, as you saw in that Alabama race where Jeff Sessions gets pushed aside for a football coach, the reality is that all Republicans are rendered more vulnerable if Trump himself is diminished, if his appeal, his ability to get people to the polls is declining. At the same time, yes, I do think that there is a recognition that conservatism, not necessarily just the Republican Party, but that conservatism isn't a viable answer for the moment that we are in. Look, we are facing a healthcare crisis, a coronavirus pandemic, mass unemployment, potentially by November at depression levels or worse, or you know, in the worst levels of what we compare with a depression. And then we have a racial justice demand that is recognized, I think, by a tremendous number of Americans as necessary. We have a climate crisis that becomes more pressing at every moment. We have rampant inequality in this country. And so you add that all together, I do think that there's a dawning recognition that the conservative agenda as expressed by the Republican Party is insufficient to begin to answer the challenges of the moment, and in fact, very possibly makes an awfully lot of things worse. And so as a result, I do think the Republicans are in a vulnerable place. But remember, a tremendous number of these Senate races are taking place in what you'd consider to be very red states. Right. And so it is a climb, no matter what, in many of these states.
And then finally, Democrats, unfortunately, you know, have a bad habit of ruining even the easiest of races. Do you think that they're up to the task? It's before them. I mean, if Hillary Clinton could lose to Donald Trump in 2016, anything is possible. What would your advice be for the Democrats if you think that these seats are within their grasp, if they would just do the right things?
Sure. At the top level, Biden has to run a truly national campaign, ideally with the most progressive possible running mate and a progressive agenda. That mobilizes people across the country, that gets them excited to come and vote for him. It has to have an affirmative component to it. I know that's hard for Biden because he hasn't always been the most progressive candidate, but that's what he has to do at the top line. Then in the different states, obviously the candidates have to run their own races. But the one bit of counsel I'd give is don't try to, you know, like cozy up to the right. Don't try to, you know, say that you're kind of, you know, a centrist or even a center right candidate. That there's no evidence or very little evidence that mobilizes people. I mean, you may run a different kind of race in South Carolina than you would in Maine, in Montana, than you would in Colorado. I understand the distinctions in the races, but at the end of the day, Democratic candidates have to present a clear alternative to the Republicans and not try to play political games with it. And finally, the Democratic Party itself, which often, as you suggest, makes terrible mistakes politically, has to get resources into races that might traditionally have been thought of as unwinnable. And that means especially to put resources into races in the South. In the article, I write a lot about the fact that some of the Democrats' more viable contenders are in southern states. And instead of always writing the South off, sometimes the Democrats have to fight for it. And I think there's a number of races they should fight for.
John, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your Nation magazine article from our website.
Thanks, Sonali. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
John Nichols has been my guest. He's the national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, host of the podcast Next Left. He's written numerous books, including Horsemen of the Trumpocalypse, and we've been discussing his newest article in The Nation, Democrats Will Be Lost Without the Senate. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.